Move to the seventh, the next case is the Virginia Creasy versus the Commissioner. Mr. Little?
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Dave Little, I'm an attorney in Frankfort, Indiana. I'm here on behalf of Virginia Creasy. I want to point out that the main reason I did this appeal is because I felt that the administrative law judge did not give Ms. Creasy a very fair trial or hearing at all, and that there was manifest injustice in what he did. I have do a lot of Social Security hearings, and always the judge says, tell the court why you're disabled. And we are allowed, and counsel is allowed, to explore from a subjective nature why the claimant feels that he or she is disabled. In the two short hearings that Judge Carday conducted in 1995, August, September, he never took any testimony. He asked one question, basically, of Mrs. Creasy, never swore she or her witness under oath, and after the second hearing basically said, well, I'm going to get more evidence, and we need to have submit another doctor's report. And then, Mr. Little, if we didn't need any more, we'll give you the opportunity for another hearing, and left it up in the air. He did submit a letter, and did get a letter from Dr. Dickerson. He did have a vocational expert present a hypothetical, which we said was not indicative of the claimant's disability. And accordingly, the claimant and the vocational expert answered the question. I sort of responded and asked questions, and basically the vocational expert says, I don't have enough information about the claimant to answer the questions. My questions directly went to the fact that given the situation of Ms. Creasy, could she maintain gainful employment? Are there any jobs available for her in the market? Could she work 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week? Now, I'll admit that there is an issue of waiver because I failed to file a brief in the district court and didn't file for an extension, and that's my mistake. I do not want the court to punish the claimant for my error. I did feel compelled on the district court because I just felt that the judge did not give Ms. Creasy a fair hearing, and he did a lot of matters in the overall decision, which was affirmed on its merits by the district court, which this court is not barred from hearing these arguments at this time.
Why didn't you file a brief?
It was just a mistake. I did not get it done and didn't follow it and then give extension. It was just my mistake. The judge, let me point out, Dr. Dickerson, from April of 93, and we would say that the onset date actually should have been August 3rd of 93, repeatedly, who his attending physician stated that Ms. Creasy was disabled, totally and completely disabled, and he gave reasons for that. And there were three different, in the trial notes, there's 213, 310, and 341, where these letters appear at different times to say, yes, she's totally disabled, the last one being the letter that he sent to the Judge Carday. The best that Dr. Dickerson said, who was her continuing attending physician, was maybe if she quit smoking and had some training, she may be able to do part-time work, but that was only just very optimistic.
Where did she ever work? Where did she work?
She worked before? In a factory in Frankfort, and the judge did say she could not do past relevant work. Basically, she was a factory worker. No other training, no other skills. He waited actually 2 years after that last hearing and made a decision based on the fact that she had turned 50 under the grid rather than deciding on the merits that she should have been disabled. If she would allow to testify, if I would allow to cross-examine, there were no medical or vocational experts at the hearing. Not that they're required, but if they'd been there, I believe the outcome would have been different. I would have been able to ask the vocational experts important questions. Given Ms. Creasy's testimony here today and what you've heard, what can she do?
Didn't you have an opportunity to submit the kinds of hypotheticals that you wanted to ask in interrogatory form?
Yes, I did, and the vocational expert responded that she was not able to answer those because she didn't have enough information. I can give you the trial if you want.
No, I remember the questions you posed in the response, but you didn't come back with anything more finely tuned. She seemed to think that your questions were too open-ended, I thought. not limited as to time, and, you know, I forget exactly how she phrased it, but anyway, you didn't build up the questions in any different way for her.
I guess it's what I felt at that time. In the letter that I sent, I felt that this is what Mrs. Treacy is testifying to, and what the doctors say is her medical condition. Can she work? And I guess there was a lapse. I could not understand what she needed, and here it was. I presume I should have asked the judge, can I ask more questions? But I felt the questions that I asked were the questions that were paramount to obtaining the answer for the judge to say, can she maintain substantial gainful employment, which where it was at step five. I thought he should have ruled at step two that her parents or combination was severe. And there's a case law that says, yes, it's common sense that if you find the combinations of the impairment are sincere, yes, you can find her disabled. Even at step five, I thought that they could have ruled that she has nothing she can do in the market. There are no jobs available for her.
Now, at age 50, she is on disability as of age 50, so we're talking between the ages of 46 and 50. Is that
correct? About 3 years from August 3rd, 93 to November 26th of 96. That's
because people between the ages of 50 and 54 are closely approaching advanced age.
That's right. Yes. Already there. The judge did not give adequate reasons for ignoring Dr. Dickerson's his diagnosis, and he didn't give it weight to the attending physicians, both of which are case law. It says that the judge should do that. He said there's a lack of objective medical evidence. Well, I don't know. The record is full of the fact. I mean, Dr. Dickerson took care of her, and he gave objective. They had the pulmonary test, and they said, yes, she has severe impairments with her small passage and a lot of other things that he said, yet he ignored that. He also said she wasn't fully credible, which I asked, she wasn't allowed to testify. She didn't testify. What basis did he say she was not fully credible, except on the one or two questions that he asked her? I think he was more concerned the fact she spoke and that she had adopted grandchildren to be taken care of, and he felt, well, if you can take care of children, you're not disabled. And if you're going to say that, then there's a lot of people out there that have children that may not be disabled. But that was more of the things I believe that he was more interested in than actually the hearing what Ms. Creasy and her mother, who was there to testify, had to say. The chronological case summary that we have, I think, in the back of the brief, clearly points out the history of her medical condition when it started in 93. In fact, she had, you know, not only COPD, but an asthma. She had major depression and ectodermal syndrome and a lot of other combination of things. And then she was on some very powerful medications as well, all of which in a combination rendered her incapable of working. And there's also letters in there saying her family was helping in her job, taking care of the children and helping her physically get by day to day.
Was the mother of the children involved in their care? Was she one of the ones that was part of the family involved in the care? The mother of the children who were adopted, or
yes.
Was she?
Yes, it was Miss Creasy's son and his wife who had these three children who she was taking care of, and she took care of them quite a bit. And there were other reasons, you know, I'm not sure insurance benefits, but she wanted to adopt and she took care of them because the mother, I think the one mother took off and was very flighty, and she wanted to give the children some stability. She'd been taking care of them. So there are multitude of factors of why she adopted them. It was a good choice. The judge approved it. But yet that seemed to weigh heavily on the judge's mind as to why she would adopt children when she was seeking disability. But I'm not sure I answered your question.
Well, it's probably not germane anyway, so go ahead.
Again, the impropriety of the whole hearing, the fact that ultimately we weren't able to show, which I think clearly we could have shown, that she could not maintain substantial gainful employment, that she couldn't, and then the judge waited 2 years to make the decision and based it on matters other than the fact that was she or was she not disabled on the onset date, which we said she was. I was not allowed to cross-examine. I was not allowed to fully develop the case as usually are in hearings, and therefore we have quite a bit of evidence. As I go into full detail when I am in a position to have my clients testify and tell everything, so then I can use that as a basis for examining the witnesses, the medical and vocational, as well as necessary for appeal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Daxey.
May it please the Court, Shefali Baxi on behalf of the government. We respectfully ask that this Court summarily affirm the decision of the District Court, or in the alternative, affirm the District Court's decision that the ALJ's finding that Ms. Creasy was not disabled was supported by substantial evidence. Ms. Creasy submits that justice and fairness dictate that all the issues raised in her brief should be addressed, even though she did not file a brief in the District Court. She cites no authority for this proposition. Ms. Creasy should not be allowed for the first time to raise arguments in this court that were not properly raised in the District Court. Ms. Creasy was represented by the same counsel throughout the administrative proceedings and at the District Court level. And at the District Court level, Ms. Creasy's counsel even filed a motion for extension of time to file her brief, which was granted, but still failed to do so. And after the District Court rendered its decision in the agency's favor, Ms. Creasy failed to file any post-trial motions questioning the District Court's judgment. Case law in this jurisdiction states that issues not raised in the District Court can be waived on appeal. At the very least, Ms. Creasy should be precluded from raising any issues that were not specifically discussed in the District Court's decision, which is primarily her due process argument. In any event, even if this court decides to consider all of Ms. Creasy's claims on the merits, the commissioner's decision should still be affirmed because the ALJ applied the correct legal standards and substantial evidence supports his findings of fact.
At the District Court, with the absence of this brief, did the commissioner ever move to dismiss the appeal for want of prosecution or anything like that?
We did not move to dismiss it at that point. Generally, different procedures are followed in different jurisdictions. In this jurisdiction, I mean, with our caseload, we don't track each case always to that degree. She didn't file her brief, and it was our duty to file a responsive brief in that jurisdiction.
So you did file your responsive brief?
No. Our brief was due once we received the plaintiff's brief at that stage.
So on what record did the District Court rule?
I believe it just ruled on the record before the ALJ, the same record that the ALJ had before him.
But with no briefs from either side, the District Court just comes out with its opinion?
Correct.
Okay. It's a little unusual.
Yeah. Ms. Creasy alleges for the first time in her brief to this court that the ALJ violated her due process rights by failing to take her additional live testimony. However, Ms. Creasy, who was represented, did not request an opportunity to testify at the ALJ level. Ms. Creasy, at the time of the hearing, the second hearing in September 1995, Ms. Creasy and her attorney agreed with the ALJ's decision, to not take testimony at that time. There was no objection lodged at that time to take testimony. Subsequently, in July 1996, the ALJ wrote a letter to Ms. Creasy's attorney attaching a letter from Dr. Dickerson. And in that letter, he indicated that Ms. Creasy could submit any kind of evidence that had previously not been supplied. And then in September of 1996, he sent a copy of his interrogatories and the responses to the VE and again indicated that she could submit new evidence.
But, you know, the troublesome thing about this is somehow what winds up is a decision of the ALJ to do this all on paper. And at least Mr. Little explains that he thought when they adjourned the second time, it was for a later hearing. And it's especially troubling since the ALJ, in fact, as Mr. Little points out, did make a comment about Ms. Creasy's, quote, credibility And usually we don't think of a credibility finding being based on a piece of paper. We think of it being based on somebody who's actually sworn in, who is asked to testify, and that phase just drops out of this case. It seems a bit troubling.
Although he didn't have a full-blown hearing, there was ample evidence in the record which indicated, which were statements by Ms. Creasy, in which she indicated her subjective symptoms, her responses to medication, her vocational background and activities. And we would submit that the evidence that was in the record, medical reports, her own statements, did provide a basis from which the ALJ could make a credibility finding. And furthermore, Ms. Creasy has not provided any further evidence of what she would have testified to that was different than the evidence that was in the record, which would somehow alter the ALJ's decision. And without even having provided that, it's difficult to say how she was prejudiced, where there was evidence that indicated, you know, these underlying things as her symptoms, what her activities were, and the ALJ did consider those in making his credibility finding.
But your basic argument has to be waiver, because people are entitled to an oral hearing in these proceedings.
Again, we would submit that she had an opportunity to object. She was represented by counsel, yet her counsel never objected or requested a hearing. And at the time that the ALJ did submit the interrogatories and responses, this should have, at the very least, alerted Ms. Creasy that the ALJ may not decide in her favor based on the VE's statement. But yet, even at that time, she didn't ask for the opportunity to testify. Since Ms. Creasy was represented all along, in some way she had some obligation at some level to request a hearing. Would further submit that the ALJ properly found that Ms. Creasy had severe impairments which did not individually or in combination meet or equal any listings, and the ALJ also reasonably discounted the disability opinions of Dr. Dickerson and found that Ms. Creasy's impairments did not preclude her from performing sedentary work where she would be in stressful working conditions. Again, in arriving at his decision, the ALJ considered the objective medical evidence, Ms. Creasy's statements regarding her abilities, the statements of other people in the record, including her mother and her two sons, regarding what her abilities were, the statements she made to the medical professionals regarding what her conditions were, the effectiveness of her medication, her side effects, as well as her activities. Finally, the ALJ reasonably relied upon the vocational expert's responses to a hypothetical question that included Ms. Creasy's vocational factors and her residual functional capacity to find that she retained the ability to perform a significant number of jobs. Because substantial evidence supports the agency's decision, it should be affirmed. In conclusion, we request that the ALJ either summarily affirm the district court's decision because Ms. Creasy has waived all her issues, or in the alternative, find that the ALJ applied the appropriate legal standards and affirmed the district court's decision based on that basis.
Okay, thank you. You have, you just got 20 seconds, so make it quick.
Very quickly. If you may please the court, in respect to I think the most important issue is they said, well, I still have the time to present evidence and object. The judge was leading, you can tell from reading the two short hearings, he was kind of leading things, and he said at the very end, and Mr. Little, if we need any more evidence, I'll give you the option to have another hearing. And then he had these letters, and the letter from the vocational expert, if you read it, was very clear, and I specifically, can she do this given these limitations? Two different questions, and I specifically referred to the jobs that she had mentioned that she could do in the response, and she couldn't answer. I don't know if I can make the questions any more simple and to the point than that, because those are exactly the questions I would have asked her at the hearing.
I think you have to wrap it up here.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I've been before many hearings, and the judges always let me present all the evidence that I need to present and present, particularly my client's testimony. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks. Case will be taken under advisement.